Okay, so I will continue from yesterday. First of all, I wanted to make a correction. There was a mistake in my proof of that the model theoretic statement for quantifier elimination implies the syntactic statement for quantifier elimination. I don't want to go back into the details of the proof because we'd have to review the notation and everything, but if anybody's been worrying about it, then come and ask me about it and I will explain the correction. Then the other comment I just wanted to make on yesterday's lecture, we proved that the theory of real closed ordered fields has quantifier elimination. So we have QE for the theory of real closed fields in the language with the ordering, and that automatically gives us model completeness for the theory of real closed fields without the ordering. So if we don't put the ordering into the language, and we could prove that directly, but we can also see it just by observing that if we have, in order to prove model completeness, we need to show that any formula is equivalent to one with just one existential quantifier. So if I take my formula, use the quantifier elimination theorem, rewrite it as a formula with in the language with the ordering, but with no quantifiers, I can then remove the ordering by using the fact that x is less than y is equivalent to the existence of a square root of y minus x, and so that introduces an existential quantifier. So we can move from the formula without the quantifiers, but with the ordering, up to a formula with existential quantifiers, but no ordering. So that gives us the model completeness. Okay, so what I want to do today is to look at another proof of quantifier elimination for a different structure. I want to use a different test for quantifier elimination. And this is all comes from the paper of Lau Van Andries and Jan de Nes. So the paper is de Nes, Van Andries, p-adic and real, sub-analytic sets, and this appeared in the Annals of Math in 1988. And I think this is a really important paper for the study of O-minimality because the strategy that's used there to prove quantifier elimination is one which has been used over, or features of it have been used over and over again in other proofs. So I think it's a really nice example to look at, and it also gives a sense of what kind of things you have to do sort of from the model theoretic point of view in order to prove quantifier elimination in a structure like the one that we'll be talking about. So, okay, so what is the setup? What we want to do is to add to our, over the reals, we have a very much an algebraic context. In the language of ordered rings, we can, the terms are, give us polynomials over the field. And so it's, you know, the sets that we can define are the algebraic sets or semi-algebraic sets, has a very algebraic feeling. In this, what we want to do is kind of lift these techniques to studying analytic functions instead of just algebraic functions. And we can't do that in the language of ordered rings because we can't define these infinite objects which are analytic functions. But what we can do is simply to put them in. So we add them to the structure. So here's what we do. I'll take F sub n to be the family of functions of power series. So f is the sum of fi x to the I in n here stands for the number of variables. So x here, x is x1 to xn. And everywhere I write I, I'm using it as a multi-index. So this is the sum over I in n to the n, such that the coefficients are in the reals, and so that this power series converges, sum of the fi x to the I converges on a neighborhood on some neighborhood of the unit box. So I'll just take this very large collection of functions, and I'm just going to put in symbols for everything in this set, for all n. So the language L sub n consists of the ordered field language that we already have, L or. To it, we add constant symbols for all real numbers. So C sub R as R ranges over the real numbers, and that's really just for convenience to have them there. And then we add symbols for all of these functions. So symbols for every F in the union of F sub N for all N. So we have this huge language. And then we'll say that the structure, in order to look at the structure, what we do is to interpret all of the symbols in the way they should be, and we interpret the power series as the function the power series defines on the unit box minus 1, 1. So the structure R sub n is the real numbers with the standard interpretation plus times 0, 1. All of the constant symbols in the reals are interpreted as the real number they're supposed to be. And the function symbols are interpreted as functions, which I'll write just for the moment, f bar. I will immediately drop the bar, but for the moment I'll just write it in. So f bar, as f ranges over all of these power series. And what that means, so where f bar of x is a function which is given by the power series at x, if x is in minus 1, 1 to the n, and 0 otherwise. So these are the restricted analytic functions. They're analytic. I've made sure that every function that I'm looking at is analytic on a neighborhood, so definitely outside of this box. And then it's given by that function on the unit box and 0 everywhere else. Okay, so what does this give us in terms of the terms? So in the case of the language of ordered rings, the terms, what we could write down, are just the things that we can build out of plus and times using constants, and so we get polynomials. Now the things that we can build, the terms we can build, are compositions of these power series with each other and with plus and times, but in fact this family of functions is closed under composition. So the terms are just feedback. Any term is just one of the power series in the family for some n. So any term is a function, or it can be interpreted as a function in S for them, for some m. And that turns out to be really important for understanding what the things are that we can say in this language. Now, it turns out we don't get quantifier elimination in this language. We have to add one more thing, and that is we add what's called the restricted division. So L and D is the language Ln, where we have a further symbol, function symbol D. D is the binary function symbol. And we interpret it, so then R and D is Rn. Let's see, I'm doing that without boldface. Okay, so it's a cursive Rn with the interpretation of the binary function symbol, and it's interpreted as D bar of xy is the function x over y if the absolute value of x is less than or equal to the absolute value of y is less than or equal to 1. I guess I have to put in y is not equal to 0. and 0 otherwise. So again, this is a kind of restricted division. So, in particular, the kind of thing that we get, for example, a sine function. So we get sine of x restricted to the interval minus 1, 1. But we don't get sine of 1 over x. So sine of 1 over x, we don't get as a function in this language. So, kind of in terms of thinking about quantifier elimination and as a corollary, O-minimality, just like, if we had the sine function on the whole of the whole line, then we would get, as a definable set, all the zeros of the sine function. We'd have this countable discrete set, and so certainly the structure we get would not be O-minimal, and in fact it's really bad in a lot of ways. By restricting it just to the interval minus 1, 1, I don't get that. But if I had sine of 1 over x on the interval minus 1, 1, I would still have that kind of bad behavior. I would get countable discrete set converging at 0, and that would be, again, a bad thing. But because I'm only allowing myself this restricted division, then I also don't get that problem. So the obvious barriers to getting O-minimality are not there. Of course, it doesn't tell us that we do get O-minimality. It just says the obvious ones aren't there. Yes? Locally. I can break it up into region, into definable sets on which it is given by, yeah. Okay, so then the theorem is that the theory of R and D has quantifier elimination. And sort of, we can put it down as the second part of that theorem. If I don't include the D symbol, theory of Rn is model complete. And then the corollary, which is maybe not immediate, but we need to know something about the power series as functions of one variable, but the corollary is that the structure is O-minimal. So Rn is O-minimal. Okay, so what I want to do is to outline the proof, outline the main steps of the proof to see how it works. The strategy for quantifier elimination is really just the completely direct one. So we start with a formula phi of x, y, and here I'm going to take x to be a tuple of variables, x1, maybe I'll call that xm. Y is just a single variable. And I guess so this is quantifier free. And I need to show that I need to find a quantifier-free formula theta just dependent on on x, such that it's true in the theory. R and D tells me that for all x, phi of x y, if and only if theta of x. So I'm just going through. For all x, there exists a y. All right, so I need to go through and eliminate one existential quantifier. And this proof is a fairly does sort of tell you how to eliminate mostly that existential quantifier. Okay, so step one. Okay, so let me emphasize, phi here is an L and D formula. And we're expecting to get an L and D formula theta. So in the language with the restricted analytic functions and with the D symbol. Step one is to get rid of D. So the way we do that is to, I'm going to just sort of be a little explicit here. If I take my formula phi of xy, and anywhere, if d of t1, t2 is a term in phi, and let me suppose, I'm doing this kind of recursively, so I'll suppose that d does not occur in either t1 or t2, and d is not in t1 and t2, then I'm just going to replace this term by a variable. So replace d of t1, t2, anywhere where it occurs in the formula phi, by a new variable, which I'll call z. And so let me call my new formula that I get when I do this. I'm taking phi and just replacing this term by z. I'll call this phi 1 of x, y, and z. It's a new formula because it has a new variable in it. Okay, so then let phi tilde of x, y, z be the formula phi 1 of x, y, z. So that's basically saying my original phi, except I've put in the z instead of the d. And now I'm just saying that z is supposed to be d of t1, t2. So then either t1, the norm of t1 is less than or equal to the size of t2 is less than or equal to 1, and t1 is equal to t2 times z, or t1 is greater than t2, or t2 is greater than 1, or t2 is equal to 0, and z equals 0. Okay, so I mean that's kind of maybe being a little excessively detailed, but it's just saying that the point is I can write down a formula which says z is equal to d of t1, t2, and I can replace it. I can therefore replace d of t1, t2 everywhere it occurs by this new variable. And then my original formula will be equivalent. So R and D says that for all x, there exists a y such that phi of xy, if and only if there exists a y and there exists a z, such that this new formula, phi tilde of xy, z. So what this gives me as I go through and get rid of all of the d's, as I get a new formula which is equivalent to my original one, it has the same x variables, but I've increased the y variables. So I've added all of these existentially quantified variables. And so then by repeating this process, so we can then assume that my original formula phi of x, y is now a formula with no occurrences of d, so it's an ln formula, is an ln formula but now, instead of having just one existentially quantified variable, I've got as many as came up in this process. So with x equal to x1 up to xm, but now y also is a tuple of variables, y1 through yn. So I got rid of the d's at the expense of introducing all these existentially quantified variables. So we kind of have to keep track of what the variables are, because now what I'm going to do is to show how to cut down the number of existentially quantified variables by one. And then we'll have to repeat the argument in order to keep, to get rid of all of them. But we have to make sure as we go through that the number of x's might increase, but the number of y's better not, otherwise my argument is not going to terminate. Okay, so step two is to look at the sort of the form of the formula that we have. And so we have this formula now, 5xy, which is an ln formula. And what can it be saying? It's saying that terms, which we built in the ln language, are either equal to zero or greater than zero, because that's all I can build for my formulae. And we just said that the terms are basically, possibly in locally, are just given by function symbols, which are power series. So in fact, what this has achieved for me is that I can assume, after doing some reduction, we may assume that 5xy is a formula of the form simply f1 of xy is greater than 0 and f2 of xy is greater than 0 or and, yeah. And fk of xy is greater than 0. Okay, so just that. What are these functions, f sub I, are just elements of f m plus n. Okay, so I can actually reduce it. So I'm really just talking about functions which are given by power series. So let's just focus on one of these. So now I'm just going to call it f, and let's just write out what it is. We can write f of xy as the sum of a sub I of x y to the I, where I is ranging over, is a multi-index, n to the n, and the a sub i's themselves are in f sub m. Okay. Yep. Then, furthermore, the ring F sub m is Noetherian, so I can look at this collection I have of I have, of course, infinitely many of these a sub I of x, because I need to they're acting as the coefficients for the y's here. But if I look at the ideal generated by the a sub I of x's, it has to be finite. I mean, finitely generated. So I can find finitely many of them which are acting as generators for the rest. So there are, or rather, there are finitely many of them, so there is some D in N such that for any I greater than D, I can write the A sub I of X as generated by the ones which came before. So it's the sum of C sub J of X times A sub J of X, where J is less than or equal to D. Okay, so I'm using the A sub J's for J counting up to D as the generators for all of the rest of them. The C sub J's, of course, are in F sub M. Okay, so they're in the same place. And I think I need another counter, C sub IJ. Okay, for the ith one, I go CIJ. Okay, so I take my F here, which I've written as with the A sub I's as coefficients, and I'll rewrite it using this method of writing the coefficients A sub I. So this is step three. Rewrite F of XY, which is the sum over I in N to the N of the sum. Well, actually, this is the sum over J less than or equal to D of just A J of X, Y to the J, then plus the sum of the greater ones, I greater than D, and then here I have to have a nested sum of C I J of X, A J of X. That's times y to the I. So then if I regroup and collect terms in the A sub J's, I can write my F of XY as the sum over J less than or equal to D of Y to the J times 1 plus the sum of C I J of X Y to the I minus J times A J of X. So what I've now achieved is I've written my function f of x, y as a finite sum. I only have finitely many terms here, of yj times something which is a unit, right? It starts with 1, times the functions a sub j. What I've possibly lost, okay, so this is, let me just write that in that form. So f of x, y is this finite sum of A sub J of X times a unit, which I'll write U sub J of XY times Y to the J. And here, U sub J of X and Y, right? XY is a unit. Now, it may be that it's no longer in my original family of functions because I've changed where it might converge. This might, you may no longer converge on all of the unit box minus 1 to 1. So we have to do a little bit of adjusting. And so kind of the point is here that there is some epsilon such that uj of epsilon x epsilon y is in my original family of functions, but I have to maybe renormalize this. So as we go through, we have to bear in mind that this is happening on smaller regions around zero, and then we'll have to fit these regions together kind of at the end. And I'm not going to go into the details of that, but it's just keep in mind that it's something that has to be done. All right, so what I've got is my function is now written as a finite sum of a function of x times a unit, and then as a powers of y. What I'd like to do is to divide by the a sub j's. But I can't do that because I'm not allowing division in my language, except I can do it provided it's only a restricted division. So we have to look in different regions where and choose which of the a sub j's to divide by so that I'm in the region where it's allowed. So let me write that down. We'll see what that means. So that was this is step four. So let's look at the set S sub j, which is those x and r to the n, I guess that's m, r to the m, such that this particular a sub j of x is the one which has the maximum norm amongst all the others. All right, and notice that this is a quantifier-free definable set, so I can refer to it. I can say x is an Sj as part of a formula, and it will be a quantifier-free formula. So Sj is quantifier-free definable, right, and so there are finitely many of them, which will cover all of the region that we're looking at. So then I can just take my power series, and I can formally divide it by a sub j of x. So if I just factor out a sub j of x, then we get a sub j of x times y to the j u sub j of x and y plus the sum over I not equal to that particular j of ai of x divided by aj of x times y to the I times u sub I of x and y. Now, this is no longer a formula in my language. But what I'll do is simply replace these expressions here by another variable. Right? So I can formally do that. So we can look at the new term, f tilde of x, v sub j, and y, where I'm just going to take, and I guess this needs a j here, f tilde sub j, I'm just going to take the symbol ai over aj and replace it by a formula. So then I get a sub j of x, y to the I, u sub j of x and y, it's y to the j, plus the sum of vj y, v sub j. V is a tuple of variables. I need one for each I. So this is then v sub I j, y to the I, u sub I of x and y. And now I'm back to having an ln term here. And I got rid of the division, which wasn't official, by just replacing it by a variable. So that's okay. That's an ln term. And what this says is that my function, I can get my function by replacing the variable v by dividing aj, ai by aj, provided x lies in the set S sub j. And provided I'm in that set, then the division is actually just a d symbol, the d of the two formulae, and so it's allowed. So to say that precisely, what we have is that in the structure R and D, it's true that for all x, there exists a y such that f of xy is greater than 0, is equivalent to saying I have to take a disjunction over all possible j's. So in x is in one of the sj's. So the disjunction over j of x is in the set sj. And once it's in the set sj, I can say there exists a y such that a sub j of x times f sub j tilde of x v sub j of x y is greater than 0. Oh, I didn't say what v is. Okay, so v, where v sub j of x is d of a sub I of x, a sub j of x. Alright, so actually it would be better if I put that into the formula. So what I've done is to define this new term, f sub j tilde, and whenever I'm in the right region, which is x is in this set, then I substitute for v sub j the d term, which says take ai divided by aj. And it's then equivalent to the original one. So there exists a y such that f of xy is greater than 0. So we can see that fj tilde is an ln term in further variables x, v, and y. And when I go to this point, and when I look at this term here with the d term substituted for the v sub j's, then it's an ln d term, but the d only occurs here. It only occurs in a controlled place. I know exactly where the d is, and I'm going to be able to quantify that. This will be a, this will occur as a, in a for all, and not in a there exists term. Kind of won't be quantified by an existential, it'll be quantified by a universal. So adding the v's puts more variables into my x's. So I've increased those variables for which I have a universal quantifier, but I'm not increasing those variables on which I have an existential quantifier. Okay, so now what I've achieved by this is that when I'm looking at the term f tilde, I've got my aj twice. I actually, when I wrote down my f tilde, I wanted to leave this one out. Okay, so I need it there, but I don't have it up there. Okay, so now looking at f tilde, what I see is that I have one occurrence. I have y to the j, which occurs only multiplied by a unit. And so therefore I can change variables and in the y's, so that is fj tilde is regular in one of its variables. So that's my next step. So step 5. Apply a change of variables so that f tilde of x, v, and y is regular in y sub n. I guess this is f tilde j sub j. It's the j one. We have to do it for each one separately. Now, when I make it regular in Yn, the point of that is so that I can apply Weierstrass preparation. So apply Weierstrass preparation. to write f to f j tilde of x, z, and y as a unit in x, z, and y times a function g of x, g sub j of x, I guess that's u sub j as well, of x, z, and y. And the point about this is that g is a polynomial in y sub n. So where u sub j is a unit and g sub j is a polynomial in y sub n. Now here again, we have to be careful because when doing the Weierstrass preparation, in general, I don't retain the convergence on the whole of the unit interval minus 1, 1. So u sub j and g sub j are not going to be elements of my original family of functions because they don't converge on the whole set. So what I have to do is do this locally and then use the compactness of the closed box for minus 1, 1 to say that I actually only needed finitely many of them, and then I have to piece them together. So there's a certain amount of work that goes into that, which I'm not going to do. So I'm just going to emphasize that we have to be careful here. As u sub j, g sub j do not in general converge on minus 1, 1 to the n plus d plus m, so are not elements, they're not objects that I can talk about in my language of f sub m plus d plus n. Right, so we have to use some method of piecing things together. Okay, so modulo that statement that what I'm going to write down now is not entirely correct, but it's close enough. What we have is that in R and D now, it's true that for all x, and I think I need to say for all v here, there exists a y such that f of x y is greater than 0 is equivalent to saying x is in one of the s sub j's, the disjunction over x and sj, and there exists y1 through yn such that a sub j of x times g sub g of x v of x y1 up to y sub n minus 1 yn is greater than 0. And the reason why I've singled out the y sub n there is to remember that g, although it's in it's an analytic function, it's a polynomial in the last variable. So what that means is that we can look at this formula. We can in particular look at this formula, which is the one that we're interested in at the moment. And we could say, we could replace everywhere where there's a, we look at it, it's a polynomial in y sub n. The coefficients are elements of f sub m plus d, plus n minus 1, I guess. But I could take each of those and just replace it temporarily by a variable. When I do that, what I have is a polynomial in y sub n with variable coefficients. So what I have is a formula in the LOR, in the ordered ring language. I've gotten rid of all of the analytic stuff. It is just a formula. It's just a polynomial. Polynomial g of y sub n is greater than 0. So the statement, the quantified formula, there exists a y sub n such that g of y sub n is greater than 0 has a quantifier-free equivalent by the quantifier elimination for the language of of ordered rings, so the theory of real closed fields in the language of ordered rings. So this is step six. Apply quantifier elimination for the theory of real closed ordered fields to get a quantifier-free formula. Now, I apply quantifier elimination, I get a quantifier-free formula which is equivalent to g of all these variables and y sub n is greater than zero, equivalent to there exists a y sub n such that that's greater than zero. Then I take that quantifier-free formula, formula in the language of ordered rings. Everywhere I see one of those variables that I put in order to make it into just a language of ordered rings formula, I replace it by the LN formula, which I wanted to be there. So I get this new formula, theta, I replace all those variables by these analytic functions, and now I have an LN formula. LND, actually, because I needed the D. So to get a quantifier-free LND formula, theta, and what I will have is then I've gotten rid of one variable. So the statement that will then be, in RND, it's true that for all x, I think I need to say for all v, I've slightly lost track of my v's, there exists a y such that f of xy is greater than 0 is equivalent to saying there exists y1 through y sub n minus 1 such that this new formula theta of x and v and y1 through yn minus 1 holds. So I've cut down my number of existentially quantified variables by 1. And now we have to repeat. I increase the number of universally quantified variables by d, but I cut down on the number of existential quantifiers. So now we repeat. And what do we have to repeat? Well, this is an LND formula. It has d in it. But it doesn't have d in any of the y's. It only has d here on the v's. So I will have to go back through and get rid of the... No, I don't need to. I don't need to get rid of the d's again. This is important because I don't want to add any more. I don't want to change the number of existentially quantified variables. They only occur here on v, and I can replace v always by a variable. It will be a variable. So this formula, in fact, has no d's in it when I have the v there. So I can look at the formula theta of xv, theta of xvy is an ln formula. It's when I replace v by d of aj of xa I of x that it has, then it has d's in it. So as purely as a formula, it's just an ln. So I can repeat steps 2 through 6 as many times as necessary. N minus 1 times, or maybe N times, N minus 2 times. Okay, so that's the way the proof goes, and that's where I'm going to stop.